The Share Pickers Podcast.
And joining me on video and on podcast is Vadim Alexander, Head of Healthcare at SP Angel. You're up, Vadim.
How are you doing, Justin?
I'm loving the markets. I'm loving them. There are certain bubbles are popping up. There's others popping down. But, you know, I've got a sort of system where if a company, you know, I like is not performing chart-wise, I just put it on a watch list, an ideas list, you know. And my ideas list is growing. And I'm liking it a lot because, you know, fundamentally they're very good. But, of course, I pay attention to charts as well. And if they're not sort of, you know, trending up in a way, I'll leave it for a while. I'll just put some chart alerts on it. But the list of ideas is growing. And I've got a bit of cash. So it's almost like it's a waiting game. So I know it'll recover. Some of these cut stops will recover. Yeah. So it's just a waiting game. So I'm quite excited. And some of the stocks I own are doing very well. And in fact, I want to talk about, I think, a company that's going to be a tech superstar. And I think it'll be one of those companies where, you know, the road on AIM is littered with tech startups that fail and that promise a lot but fail. This one, I genuinely believe, is going to be the real deal. And I'm very excited about it. And the solution they're solving couldn't be bigger. It's massive. But anyway.
Which one is this?
It's called Silver Bullet, by the way. By the way, they come up with a trading update. I did an interview. If anyone's watching this on YouTube, check out the YouTube. Or, in fact, the podcast before is Ian, the CEO of Silver Bullet Data Services. Now, not a lot of people know this, but we're all aware of third-party cookies, aren't we? You know, basically, if you go on the internet, and you know, you visit a site, or you may even not visit a site or whatever, or some site, then all of a sudden you get an advert following you around the internet, you know, by the side of thing, and think, I don't want that. Or why is this advert following me around everywhere I go? So that's because they drop a cookie into your browser, and previously you didn't even have to say accept that. And so now with privacy laws coming in, which is right, because data is a very important thing. And for a long time, we had lots of companies like Facebook that are trading your data. And, you know, the odds, the saying is when you don't pay a price for a service, basically you are the product because it's your data. Like Facebook was using that for a long time. But now this is coming in. And Apple, Safari and Firefox deprecated third-party cookies. That means got rid of them, abolished them for privacy reasons, you know, back a couple of years, but didn't really make a dent in the market because the elephant in the room, of course, is Google and Google Chrome, because they have over 60% of internet traffic. And when it comes to adverts, serving adverts, they are the big guys. Now, for years, they've been promising to deprecate these cookies, and they haven't done it. Why? Because they earn so much money from it. The digital advertising market is worth $700 billion and growing. It'll be over $1 trillion by 2030. In fact, before 2030. So it's massive. But now, Google have agreed to do it. I think January this year, they've said they're going to deprecate 1%. That's all so far. 1% of third-party cookies. But by the end of the year, they'll be gone. So it's a huge amount. And digital advertisers are worrying because how are they going to get a return on their investment if they don't know who they're targeting? Now, what's Silver Bullet coming to this? And they're working with big clients like Heineken, Mars, huge clients, actually. They're working with the top three biggest advertising agencies in the world because they've got two parts of their business. One is a customer experience where they help people structure their data, first-party data. People actually come to your website and they collect data and that, structure it, how to have advertising campaigns. But the second part, very exciting, it's called 4D AI. And it can tell companies exactly, rather than now they don't know where to place adverts and they can get analytics from that, they can say, they can scan websites and the AI can pick up and give you a score on a website on how effective your advert will run on that site without using third-party cookies. Now, they just come up with a trading update. And it's 25 million market cap company. But they come up with a trading update. Top line revenue up 42% to 8.3 million. Their 4D AI, which only launched properly a year and a half ago, up 85%. And already they booked 5 million in revenue in the first 2 months of this year. And this is the year. This is the year, the big year. I wouldn't be surprised if they double their revenue this year to like 16 million from 8 million. Because I was chatting to Ian. He said, now advertisers are really taking it seriously. They realize by the end of this year, they won't be able to target people as effectively as they could do with third-party cookies. Mm-hmm. And like I said, it's a vast area spend-wise. It's huge. There's no bigger sector than
competition. Just in terms of competitor.
Yeah. Well, this is the
services.
Thing.
Just to understand, why are they so good? Like what?
Yeah. They're now sort of they've now been integrated on all sort of big sort of supply side programmatic platforms. Okay. And I'll give you an example. So they were paired against a Google rival. Google put, you know, give contextual AIs, a couple of these around, but they specialize in more visual TV. So they can scan, for example, let's say that, you know, a company want to advertise on YouTube, they think which channels we put it on. Mm-hmm. Their 4D AI can scan the content of a video and scan another one, or another one, another, and they'll say this one is the best one to advertise on. But they run a test, both them and Google's solution, right, for Renault. So Renault, huge brand, in a massive global brand. They outperformed Google's solution by 131% on click-throughs and 131% on views, 151% on click-throughs. So they've beaten Google's solution. And they are, they'll be taken out. They will. It's one of those. It's one of these companies. You know, in Britain, it's quite good at tech. You know, there's a lot more money going to tech in the USA than the UK. But even so, Britain punches above its weight in tech. More is spent here, you know, investing in tech than any other European country. And I think this is one of the darlings. I think it'll be so impressive going forward. This is just a start. Like I say, this growth in this revenue is the start of a literally huge wedge where digital advertisers need to find solutions to get return on their investment. You know, most people's business models runs off advertising on the internet. If they can't do it effectively, what are they going to do? So that's a huge solution. And I think, look into it, put it on your watch list, Vadim. Yeah. I've been excited about stocks in the park. Some of them worked out, some they have. This, the validation for me is the clients they have, huge clients, massive global clients, yeah. And Mars and Heineken, yeah. And Renault, all these kind of people, yeah. and also just the revenue growth, that together.
Yeah, the ramp up is, seems in the ramp up phase, and it's always hard to buy a stock that's up. I mean, it's probably its charts like this right now, right?
It will come off a bit on results. It's, you know, you get these results where our liquidity events for some, you know, who are sitting on the stock, because it's come down. I think it's now based back at IPO price, basically.
Well, wait, this is what's interesting. Actually, can you put the chart up? Is that
easy? Yeah.
Because it's actually these moments sometimes provide an entry point to a good story. Yeah.
Let's go over this. I've got something on the screen I want to show. Well, there's nothing. So here we are. This is the chart. It IPO'd back here in obviously the bull market, July 2021. And what level was that? So I can't see, my head's in the way. At pretty much 280. And so it's come down all the way down to sort of 20 pence here. I had Ian on the podcast back here. And I thought, I like this company. Data, as we all know, data's becoming more important. The people of class is the new oil, pretty much. And I think it's even more important than that because, you know, it's about everyone. But it came down here, obviously, the bear market selling off. Now, it was burning a lot of cash down here because they were developing this 4D AI, which is very scalable because it's basically tech that sits on platforms. But once it's been built, now, the good thing is here, if you look at the results, let me just get the results out. The costs have gone down 10%. And they're going to be close to profitable now. They're almost at the EBITDA profitability. And the revenue's gone up by 42%. So it's okay. If you see a company, for example, if their losses have gone up by 50% and their revenue's gone up by 40%, that's no good. Yeah. But this, their costs have gone down 10% and their revenue's gone up 42%. And I do honestly think it's the start. But look, today we've had a... In fact, it's coming back a bit. Today, look at that. It dropped by 30% at one point. But I don't think people understand it. Within the first 2 months, they've done 80% of last year's revenue. And this is the pivotal year. It's massive. And I think they'll probably do even more than that in the next 2 months, in the 5 minutes.
I think, Justin, definitely agree with you that this is one of these stocks where the revenue is starting to genuinely ramp up and the order book is strong and they're doing, you know, whatever, like you said, last year's revenues in the first 2 months. It is a very interesting time to be investing. I think what's difficult is you've got that 20p to 170p rally, right?
Yeah.
Now that's really difficult to follow into, right? So the best time to take entry points is like the stock decline today, right? You said maybe results were slightly behind the expectations and that's tipped the stock down. Now is the time to be looking at stocks.
It is. I mean, they weren't behind expectations. All it was is that it's, like I said, it's been the best performer on AIM. And when you're right, when you have that, first of all, you may have people up here who took part in the IPO who are still underwater, you know? And they're back now, or half their loss maybe, or they're down here. And you get, you know, final results are a liquidity event, or trading updates are a liquidity event for some of these private people. It went down 30%, but it's getting bought up, which is quite nice. And I think it may have to go sideways for a while. But I, you know, and these things are, I mean, they are quite a newish company, but I just think the validation is there, is the clients they have, the revenue growth they have, the space they're in is very exciting.
Yeah.
And they seemingly have the best product out there for a small company. And I said, I did say to Ian, how are you, you know, signing up these massive clients? They've done work with like Channel 4. In fact, if you look at their roster of clients, they are massive. And I said, how are you working? He said, well, it's basically our reputation, but also, you know, we work hard. We're also on some of the biggest demand side, supply side platforms, you know, in the world. So that helps. And you can't get on those platforms unless you have a product that's going to work, you know. They're all sort of ad tech people. But I there's going to be volatility, absolutely. But I think it's one for the watch list. Just keep an eye on it, Vadim. And I think, literally, if they carry on the way they are, I think in a couple of years' time, it'll be way, way, way above this. In fact, they're mostly now, 50% of their stuff is done in America, which is the biggest advertising market in the world. And I think they, you know, eventually, this will probably get taken out by an American company, because there's lots of advertising companies out there without that tech. They need this tech, you know. And it's shot up on those results. But
the last question.
I'm so enthusiastic about them.
I can see that. I can see that. But the one last question, just for today's purposes, what is the price to multiple? What are the multiples? What's the sales?
Yeah, so
market cap is what?
Yeah, 8 million to 25. So 3x sales. Okay, they'll be about, I'd say, less than 2x on this year's sales, pretty much. So
that's not crazy.
I mean,
yeah, that's not even a growth company valuation.
Yeah, exactly. In America or in a bull market, I mean, 5x sales.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
they are once they the you know, gross margins are like 70-80%. So yeah. once it starts dropping through and they get certain volume, they'll be very profitable. And their margins are good. It's not a lot I don't like about this company. I generally think, you know, when you're looking at companies and this can be a real portfolio transformer. And I think over the next few years, if they continue doing what they've done and if they're starting out, I think it could be amazing. And I'm really, so listen, everyone, get caught up enthusiastically. You know, don't just blindly jump in, do some research, be very critical, be objective, you know, manage your portfolio with expectations, but please do some research on it and look at the market as a whole. It's huge, digital advertising market. It's been growing every year for like 10 years, 20 years. It hasn't even slowed down in the last 2 years. It's still growing. And like I said, it's now 700 billion spend. And it's going up. I mean, how many markets do you, I mean, you work in an area where you know about market sizes, where you look at, say, cancer treatment, all that. 700 billion going to a trillion before 2030. That's big, isn't it?
You know? Yeah, these are big. That's a big market.
So
you know the old saying, it's all about addressable, direct addressable
market. Yes, it's the total addressable market, yes. The good thing is, it's like, there was a company before called Bidstack. They're very niche, really games, advertising games. I thought that could have been, you know, a goodie. But you realise it was quite niche because they did natural advertising within games, but it only suit games that had natural advertising boards like football games or rally games. And so they're very limited. And then the gatekeepers to that were obviously the game owners. This is different. This is a huge, massive market for advertising. There's no gatekeepers. People want to return on their advertising. You know, come the end of this year, digital advertisers will want to get the same return on their advertising they did before the third-party cookie was deprecated. And now it's gone, they can't. But they can if they find, you know, silver service, because it's an excellent solution, I think.
To your credit, Justin, I have to say you have been speaking about this one for this whole rally. So I think you mentioned it to me a year ago, and we've been talking about it. I think, you know, it's a...
That was a good
pick, I have to say. It's a very good pick.
Yeah, some people often say to me, it's normally trolls who've lost money because they bought in, not researched. I hate that. Trolls never take responsibility for their own money. They just follow me forever. So hang on, if I suggest the company, it's gone down. I've lost money as well. You know, I don't want to lose money on any stock. I want them all to do well. But like I said, and sometimes you jump out of that. I will put stop loss in the company. If it goes wrong, I'm out. That's it. I'm not a whole sitting on forever, sitting on a loss, getting bigger and bigger.
Yeah.
Now, if it goes well, I'm in for as long as it goes well. I'll continue to hold. Like I said, I've held this for quite a while now, and I'll continue to hold as long as it goes up, you know? I mean, I'm in profit in it, and I've got stop losses quite a bit lower than this, so it's fine. I mean, even today, you know, I think the next stop loss is down at, I think, 120s or something. So I'm quite safe. So and that's not all my holdings. It's a little chunk of it is all. So that's the way I work it. But I mean, yeah, as long as companies perform, I will hold them forever. You know, it's not about time frame for me. It's about the performance. And like I said to someone, if you can make 40% in a month or in 2 years, what would you prefer to do? And so, you know, so it's not about saying investing, trading. It's about making money or not losing money. That's the key thing. Yeah. Not losing money and then hopefully making money. Anyway, I've taken up enough of this podcast. It's all about you, really. But it's all about me so far. But
No. So, I mean, look, a good pick is a good pick and it doesn't matter. You and I, we discuss, you know, many stocks outside of healthcare. You know, I'm not only, maybe I'm overly invested in healthcare and that's part of the problem. But certainly have been diversifying over the last few years a lot. So it's great to talk about these picks because, you know, I still like small companies, you know?
Yeah. Talk about Hemo. You did a fundraise, didn't you?
Yeah, so we at SP Angel did a fundraise for Hemogenics. The ticker is HEMO. And it was quite a good result, I have to say. The company now can move into clinical trials. This is, you know, basically the let me tell you about the company first.
Yeah. So,
and we have talked about this one before, but maybe not as much as we would have liked to. This company is kind of coming out of the dark, if you like. Companies that move into clinical to become clinical companies, clinical stage companies. Preclinical companies often do a lot of different things, right? So they're doing research on this project or on that project. And, you know, it's always hard to say what real progress is in at the preclinical stage. So this is like animal modeling, you know, in vitro modeling, in silico modeling, all of that kind of modeling goes on preclinically. But it's always difficult to say, well, what is substantial progress? Because they're all of these companies are in very specialist fields and the outcomes of their work are very esoteric. So you really need to know what's going on and follow the story closely to know whether there is truly, you know, progress. That's why a big milestone for a company is to become a clinical stage company because one of their programs eventually gets into clinic and then you can really start measuring how that progress is going because you get clinical in human data, right? And that's what's happened here with this business. They've been recently approved by the FDA and it was a hard path. I understand their submission to the FDA. It's called an IND. You submit to the FDA to be able to get permission to commence clinical trials using your product, okay? Mm-hmm. Without that permission, you can't even put it into humans, okay? So they just recently, this is about a month ago or a couple of weeks ago, received their approval from the FDA to start their clinical trials for their first phase one, which moves them for the first time into clinic. And that's a big milestone for the business. So that's the spike you see there, okay?
Yeah.
We'll talk about the therapy, but what we just recently did is we did a placing that permits them to move forward with that, with commencing, on that pathway for their first clinical trial. What they're doing it on is the interesting area that they're in. And this is why I think it's attracting a lot of attention, this company. I mean, first of all, it's very liquid. It's about a 28 million market cap business.
Yeah.
The raise we did was about just over $4 million. The area they're in is an area called CAR T therapy. Okay. And you may have heard of this space. It's in the area of oncology, it's the one of the most cutting edge areas of immuno-oncology. So what you're doing essentially is taking cells out of a person who is suffering from a type of cancer. In this particular instance, it's AML, it's a leukemia. You modify the cell to recognize the cancer. You amplify those cells in your own lab, which Hemogenics does in their own lab. And then you put the new amplified cell line back into the patient.
Turbocharged cell,
Yeah. It recognizes the cancer and it kills the cancer. That's the promise of CAR T therapies, okay? Mm-hmm. The thing about CAR T therapies is that they have been very successful in certain patients. They've been curative, okay?
Yeah.
So meaning there's patients that have lived over 5 years post CAR T therapies from clinical trials done 5 years ago, basically. There are currently 6 CAR T therapies approved. And one of them, a Novartis-based therapy, was approved on 63 patients alone. Okay.
Wow.
So this isn't something that needs to go on forever into phase 3 trials, take 10 more years. The beauty of this area, and this is why I think Hemogenics is on the cusp of something, is that you only need a small sample of patients in which this works. You obviously have to be safe. You know, that's the number one thing with CAR T therapies. That's why the FDA was so strict with them. But now that the FDA has allowed them, that's a major box tick. Once you've demonstrated safety, if you show any kind of signal of efficacy in this indication, in any oncology indication, but in this one in particular, you don't need thousands of patients. You need, you know, dozens of patients, and you're likely to get some form of an approval. So that's the big play here. You know, the FDA is, I wouldn't call it lenient. It's not a question of leniency. It's a question of medical need. So if this CAR T therapy works in clinic, you know, or shows a signal of working, it doesn't have to work perfectly. It just has to work, you know, show a difference to standard of care. Then this could be you have a drug basically. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. And even from an investing point of view now, like I said, you know, pre-revenue, I always keep saying this, you know, on the webinar in my investment club, but, you know, when you're looking at a loss-making stock, you think, how much money do they have? How long will it last?
Yeah.
So after a placing, you get some churn. You get some people churning and selling straight away. You know, give it a few weeks. And if you like the company, you've done research, it's a very good time to buy because you've got that cash runway where news will be delivered and the share price will tend to rise. You know, yeah. And so
that's exactly it. That's exactly it. Before a placing, when you know you're nearing the end of a runway, that's the worst time to buy because you know the company, you know, it's all visible to everyone. You can back out looking at any company's P&L and, you know, cash flow balance sheet. Where they're at in cash. And so you're absolutely correct. And that's why I'm bringing it up today. It's more for investors as a whole. This is a good time. You generally get a good price and you know you've got cash runway, you know?
Yeah.
And then
you
have to do your work on whether you can pallet the risk of this. It's high risk stuff without question. This is, you know, these are cell-based therapies. They're probably the most riskiest end of biotech. But that's why, you know, you get the returns. Yeah.
Yeah. The share price after placing can be a bit sort of volatile, a bubble on the bottom there, but it's almost let it settle down so it doesn't drop any further, and you will tend to see this, you know, like I said, like almost a flat line like this for a little bit, and then you know, if you think it's not going to go lower, or you could put stop loss in 20% down, for example, but then just wait, and some news will come out, and if you look at how often they release news, and any bit of news, you know, like I said. When you get, I talk about this a lot, but, you know, and I don't mean down stocks when I say this. I talk about hope high potential stocks. And what I mean by that is they're loss-making, but they have a very good story.
Yeah.
But they have to, and it's not just based on, you know, fantasy. The story could be very big.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think, first of all, you have to look at, you know, how much cash they have, how long will it last? Mm-hmm. And secondly, if they have the cash, that can allow the story to flourish. If the story is about cash, the story can't flourish, you know, and so
and
now they have cash. It's like the story can flourish a bit, and so that will push the share price up. So it's almost like, say, if you know, and I always believe you should have, you know, one or two of these, depends how big your portfolio is, but you know, at least one of these hope by potential stocks in your portfolio, because they can really make a big difference. You don't have to take a big stock, because like I said, this, you know, if you look at that, where this has gone before, you know, it's gone from 1.6 to 14 pence. It's like a 10 bagger in literally a few weeks.
And look at the spikes. Kind of, like, I mean, look how the shares spike. If you pull out the chart, you see those spikes. You see
Well, look at that. I mean, 6.3 pence. It closed at in February 9th of February. That was
exactly.
So you can see the kind of level it right. So I mean, those kind of things. You obviously, the way to play that is just once it's got cash, is sit there. Don't. The thing is, the story could play out, but don't believe completely. The story will play out. That's the way to play it, because if you have a rise of that and you've doubled your money, put a stop loss in. You know, even if you just cover off your
your strategy is excellent. You have a trailing stop loss on your order.
No, well, I don't have trading, but I do move them. I check them on a regular basis. I mean, normally it depends on how volatile the company is, but normally I will check them at the end of the week. But I've got stop loss in, just adjust them a bit.
Yeah.
But coming to that, if you shoot up like that and you don't double your money, first of all, don't believe that it will go 10 back straight away or whatever. Just think about risk. What have I got to lose here? So you can't lose. If you literally put a stop loss in and you can't lose, you know, then that's it. You can only have upside or break even. So it's perfect. I mean, yeah, look at some of the rise on that. That was a phenomenal rise there. It literally went from 1 pence, And it came out. Look at that. Look at how volatile that was, though.
Yeah, I mean, look at the volatility. It's true, exactly.
It went from 1 pence to 10 bagger, came back down to 5 pence, yeah. Went back up to 14. So most people would have sold there, I suppose, but have gone back up. But that was an amazing run. But no, I'm quite interested in that. In fact, you know what? It's a good placing, actually. They made a decent amount of money at 2 pence. Like I said, it's now below that. And what's interesting, I don't know if you saw Avacta. I've talked about this a lot of people. I don't want to diss Avacta, but you know, it looks like it's doing good things. But I also think for these kind of companies, you should be looking sub 30 million market cap, sub 20 even sometimes, to really get that sort of, you know, sub 30.
You want to have that 10. Yeah. You want to capture that 10 times return. Yeah. You want the 10 times return to be priced in already. I mean, I totally agree.
Exactly. For example, I think before this placing and was close to 400 million market cap.
Exactly.
It's phase one clinical trials. The story has taken off already, you know, it's priced in. Exactly. And so.
Exactly. Yeah. And look, again, nothing. I like the Avacta story. I like the management team. And, you know, it's more the pricing. It's exactly that. That's the precise problem. When you have other good stories, like we're just presented one, you know, Hemogenics, you know, that is where all the upside hasn't been captured yet. That's how you have to compare these companies. You know what I mean? So there's two phase one companies. One's 150 million. I think the deal was done at 130, and one's done at 28 million, you know, and arguably CAR-T is a more interesting and hotter sector, you know, with multi-billion dollar deals being done. That's the other thing about the CAR-T Hemogenics is that area is just taken off. There was an IPO of a company called Kyverna in the US, phase two asset, CAR-T therapy, 360 million raised on, you know, $1 billion market cap. Another company called Gracell or Graycell was taken out by AstraZeneca in December of 2023, $1.2 billion takeout for a phase 1B trial, CAR T therapy.
Wow.
So you can see, you know, the upside potential for Hemogenics that's entering phase one, right? They're not that far behind these other big deals, you know, entering phase one. You're getting in at 28 million today, let's say roughly. And you know, if you compare that to getting in at 130 million for another phase one company.
Yeah, it's just maths, isn't it? You know, it's just maths. I mean, the bigger the company is, you know, every time a company doubles, it gets twice as hard to double pretty much.
Yeah,
and so when you're seeing a potential upside like that in like I said, like Hemogenics, and like I said, it's still 30 million.
Yeah.
That could get to 300 million with no sweat, you know. I mean, if they release the right news, but when you are at 300 million already, you know, literally going to 3 billion, that's very, you're gonna have to be generating lots of cash and revenue then by that period, you know. So there's very few companies at that level. And I mean, look around the UK market, how many companies can you see that are valued in the billions that have no revenue or a lot and hugely lost million? Not many, you know. So
exactly.
I saw a lot of people married to the story of Avacta, and I said, never get married to the story. Research the company and like what they're doing, but never just think it's going to work out. Always think risk first, not reward first. And I think that's why a lot of private investors tend to lose money. They think reward first, not risk, and they start piling because they're thinking reward. They'll start off with a sensible amount of exposure, and they think, oh, I put say £1,000 in that, that's all right, that's fine. And in fact, if it's gonna be a 10 bagger, that'll be 10 grand. If I put 10 grand in, I get 100 grand. Now, that 10 grand may be all their portfolio, and you're thinking, why are you doing that? No, you should think of risk first. What if it goes completely wrong? You know, you're going to lose 10 grand, you're going to lose all your money. Now, if you'd only kept with £1,000 and it went completely wrong, you'd only lost £1,000, 10% of your portfolio, rather than all of it. So think on the risk side first. And if it starts going in the right direction, you can always average up and put some stop losses in. But I mean, never, you know, so, you know, I like Hemogenics. Yeah. In fact, I don't know if you read it today. There was some, I saw people sort of, you know, there's a huge amount of people, you know, fans of Avacta, and almost an echo chamber of fandom believing it's going to play out. Still a high risk company, you know. Like I said, a clinical phase one, the chances that we talked about that last week, getting through to commercialization, you know, are against odds, but they completely believed in it. And because of that, it's almost like they're removed from any kind of reality on risk management. And I think, don't do that. It's about your money. It's not about the story. It's about your portfolio value. It's about making money and not losing that money. Do you see the update from Plarium today?
Another one worth talking about, definitely. So it's kind of an update, but at least we know where they are. You know, I was actually
didn't help the share price.
Yeah,
it did. Fundraising there.
It never helps to say we need money at this level, yeah. And you know that money pathway is pretty steep, right? It's I can't remember the exact details. It's there in the announcement if you bring it up, but it's like 10 million now or in the next.
They've got a bit of backing for some of it. I've known if this is they did say
they have two shareholders that said they. So look, basically what they said is they have money now with strict cost controls, I think, till the end of this year, which is good, yeah. Which is positive. They have two key shareholders that have expressed that they will back them to the tune of almost half the capital requirement. So that's NewChem and Graco, I think is the name of the company.
Yeah.
So those two have said they'll do roughly 5 million. There it is, 2.5 to plus two. So 4.5 million out of the 10 requirement. You know, and so there's a shortfall of about 5 million, and they'll, you know, I'm pretty sure they'll find it, quite frankly.
They say that Her Majesty's Revenue and Customs will stump up 2.5 million, apparently. Enterprise investment scheme, hopefully, the taxpayer is going to stump up for that. So, I think if they got literally half it done, pretty much with major shareholders,
I think they'll get there. So, but I have to say, overall, yes, the shares are down, but it's starting to look different now. So, you know, there was a little bit of lack of direction and nobody really knew what was going on. Now it's pretty clear. What I also like from this announcement is kind of the revenue pathway.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Do you know what? I did think about this. I thought, I like that. Then I thought, hang on a sec. These are just, you know, what they hope to achieve.
Their forecasts.
It's nice that they're putting it in there. May get nowhere near that. But the fact
absolutely.
Is that they are looking at, you know, a ramp up. So the end of 2024, revenue $2-3 million, could be less than 1 million. End of 2025, they're saying 5 to 6 million. And then 2026, profitable at 25 to 30 million revenue. And then 28 projected.
Look at the big, you know, subject to post gas exchange FDA approval. So that means doing another clinical trial and getting gas exchange as another indication, okay? Which is amazing if you can get it done, right? And it requires serious cash to be able to get that trial completed, right? So it's a catch 22. It's a classic catch 22. And it's that of all biotech or drug development businesses, is that you need to get the cash to do the trial to get the result, right? So if you're, you know, we're struggling for the first 5 million way up there in your announcement, you know, it's nice to talk about what the future will look like in, you know, 3-4 years, 5 years time. But let's focus on the first part of that announcement, because if you think about it, you know, we're talking about getting the first 10. Let's talk about that first and not talk about the next 25 you need. Do you know what I mean? You know what I'm saying?
To
get to the $25 million in sales, right? So, you know, one step at a time, as far as I'm concerned. But the first step is nice. And that's what's a kind of breath of fresh air here, is it's being very explicit about what they need and what they're able to achieve in the short to medium term. And it's not that hard, I think. Well, sorry, it's hard work for the company, but it's not totally crazy what they're aiming to achieve. You know, 2 to 3 million in sales this year would be a real nice, it would be really nice for the company to demonstrate that. And that would make, I think, 5 million the next year, far more. Five to six. So that revenue trajectory, I think, would be very welcome by the markets. And at some point, you look at this and you say, well, where's the price? Oh, it's getting really cheap, okay?
It's 11 million market cap. Less than that. I think it's less than that now. I mean, after today's drop, I think it's less than 11 million. It's 20% down, so it's sub 10 million. Now, if they do achieve that's the thing. To me, again, if they land the cash, that's very good. This is a Q2. So I think, if you think about taking, if you believe the story in this, and I do like the technology here, let's get the financing done. If they get the financing done,
absolutely, then very difficult to invest as a personal PA punting. You're not going to invest right before the company just said they need 5 million more. You know what I mean? It's not going to be done at a premium, right? Yeah. It's like, look at the pricing on Avacta. You know, it's just that of course there's going to be a pricing discount to get the financing done, right? So, you know, and there might be other options, and that's fine. All that is good, okay? To me, what's most important, though, is that once that's out of the way, the pathway now is far more established and clear. It's very clear, this statement. And I think that could be really interesting as an investment at that time, right?
Yeah. You know? Well, do you know what? There's two inflection points here I see. So if they get the funding done, you may want to take it, you know, if the share price has shrunk so much and they go almost a 5 million market cap, so they got 10 million sort of added on top of that, it's 15 million market cap pretty much. If they get that done, first of all, that's a good sign. They've got a bit of a runway then. And then the next goal, if they achieve that 2-3 million, if they don't, it may fall over again. But if they achieve that 2-3 million in the first year, then that sets you up thinking, okay, they did that. On to the next one, and then you start building some momentum there. But it's taken a long time, isn't it?
Well, this is where we are now. Is I mean, if you think about it, if you're trying to raise 10 on the current market cap, it's starting to become a complete write down for existing investors, right? I think no one's denying that reality. It just is what it is now. It's where they're at. However, you know, for anyone coming in new at this stage, it looks like it could be good value once that money is raised, you know, or as part of the placing, you know, if someone, you know, wants to at some point participates in a placing, it might be an interesting price entry point, but more importantly, the risk reward, right? It's all about risk reward. If you're coming in at a really low price or a good value on 2-3 million revenue forecast for this year, well, the flip side of that is that really hard to achieve for a company that's just, you know, 2 months now going on to the third month into the year? They have some visibility on the revenues, right? They didn't just come up with 2-3, I'd like to think so, out of thin air. So I'd like to think that that's achievable. And 5-6 is not a huge ask if you've achieved 2-3. So there is some traction there. And they've explained how they would get there, right? They explained the number of machines and how many scans per week. You know, it's my point is, it looks like it's doable. So it might just be an interesting time. Anyways, one to watch. It's one I'm going to be watching to see, you know, how this all plays out. I've always liked Polarian's technology. Yeah, I still do.
Yeah, and the thing is, like I said, risk reward. First of all, the reason why it's because it's dropped off a cliff here. I mean, don't jump in here because it's guaranteed they raise 5 million. Fine, so it's a slim chance, you know, they're going to have money, but never, you know, always look at worst case scenario. So if I put my money in now, what if they don't raise the money? I mean, we've seen many companies go to the wall on AIM. That's the worst case scenario.
Yeah.
So if you know, and then you think, okay, back that off. Maybe they're going to raise 5 million. But if they only raise 5 million, there'll be disappointment. You know. So and if there is 10 million, that's going to dilute share. So wait until that's done. Wait until that's out the way, because it's a stumbling block.
100%. You can't say otherwise. That's a no-brainer. Yeah. I totally agree. You need to see them get recapitalized. It's like we keep saying, you know, you wait for the placing to happen. Like in Hemogenics, you know, the placings happen. They have the cash runway now. Now you decide whether, you know, you want to pallet the risk, but at least you've got the funding requirement off the table as a risk. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Cool. With Avacta, it's awful because there were people saying the placing will run at a premium. I thought people were fans of the company. I thought that doesn't happen. It generally doesn't happen. It's like, you know, loss-making companies in this market. The good thing about Polarian, by the way, and Hemogenics is once they get the funding done, I assume the next time they'll raise, the markets will be a bit more forgiving because obviously we're going to see interest rates coming down, and maybe that will provide a bit more liquidity. Maybe we'll head towards and back into a bull market. And so, of course, raising money should be a lot easier in that environment. So we've always got a bit of time on our hands. But yeah, I mean, there's rumors here. Look at that. I mean, there's that level here at sort of, you know, a quid. Okay, bouncing off all the time.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I always say never trade the bottom of a range because it can break lower. You're better off buying the breakout and then putting a stop loss in because at least you think then it's going to break higher.
Yeah.
But like I said, it went from £1 and the rumors of 75 pence placing, and it came in last night RNS at 50 pence. That is a real gut punch. And for investors, I know sort of topping up here beyond £1, all that stuff. Oh, my word. So, it is awful. But again, I know some people put way too much money in. That's a sad thing. And I'm thinking, you know, please think of when you invest, think of the risk first, not the reward. And that way, you never really get into big trouble. When you think of the reward, you don't think of what you're going to lose. And sometimes that happens in investing. I know too well because I've done that. You know, I had a big chunk in Polarian And I didn't
we all know that too well.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
You remember I bought, look at that.
My infamous allergy therapeutics investment. Well, that one went that one went real well.
Yeah, exactly.
It's the nature. We have to diversify. You have to take funds, but you have to be prepared. And that's your, to your point. You have to be prepared to take a complete loss on some of them, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And when, like I said, when you think like that, then you tend not to go crazy.
Exactly, on any one
shirt. Yeah. And for example, I was buying player, I think it's 17 pence originally. I think I averaged up, so my average was round about, I think, 30, 40 pence. But then that down day, that day there, where it just, I didn't sell straight away. First of all, I couldn't sell because I had too much, and everyone was selling. And so I did wait for the bounce. I think it's still on the third day. So I did get back. When it got back here, 42%, I think I was literally just a little bit underwater. In fact, when it really gapped down in here, I was underwater 35 pence. So my average ran about that level. But then it rallied by 100% the next few days. And I got out to this level because, I mean, I didn't try and get out here because I made a loss, but I made a little bit of profit. But I mean, I should never have had that much money in there because I did really well from 30 pence. So I'm really rallying hard. And I should have just put some stop losses in, even when the pullbacks happened, like, you know, down here, I took some off.
Yeah, and, I don't think the stop loss would have worked on that big drop. That was the CRL day.
Oh, no, the big drop. No, because, but. Yeah. But for example,
no, but you're right. But earlier on was the time.
Yeah. So I tend to my initial one, if I'm up quite a bit, I'll put a new high. I'll put an initial stop loss in to take a little chunk out at like 20% below that high, and so you know a couple of times it went 30% down, and even this I think it went 30% down here. And in fact, yeah, it did sort of drop down here, didn't it, before the day, and. Yeah, it's quite volatile, but it's just having. It did take up a big chunk of my portfolio as well, which I should have addressed, and I didn't because I believe the story. Yeah. I really believe the story that this is going to the moon.
We all watched it go to 110p.
Yeah,
and I like you. I took half. We discussed this, I think, over the years. Literally over the years, we've been following the stock. I took half off the table on the that spike downwards. I didn't get out at anywhere near 110p. I think I got out just above 50p on the CRL. It was, you know, just a rule I've learned from previous drug development fiascos is that when you get a no from the FDA, I've just made it a rule, at least take some money off the table because it's always going to be some turbulence afterwards. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Still like the story, kept the other half. But, you know, wish I sold the whole thing at that time. You know what I mean? Having seen it go to 110, it was heartbreaking to get out at around 50 levels, right? Because you've just seen it halve. But then hindsight is 20/20. Had I sold it all then, that would have been a brilliant investment. I didn't. You know what I mean? So I kept half all the way down. I got out at, I think, at 9p, capitulated finally on the other half. All in all, when you blend the average, it's okay outcome, but when you see it go to 110, you know, you're to your point, it's very important, I think, to put like some rigor in the exit strategy. And that exit strategy rigor, if it is some, and you know, trailing stop losses are brilliant. I wish I did it more often. And in fact, I should apply that more. My only issue with stop losses in small cap AIM companies is that they don't tend to work when they gap trade.
No, so, they don't. That's
you know, they just smash right through your stop. That's the problem.
But they do
work, like you were saying, on those few other rallies where they came off slowly. Then that would have worked. Yeah.
And another thing is, like you say, when you're in smaller caps, that the another way of literally protecting yourself is just go smaller. You know, don't hold massive positions.
That's right.
Because that'll protect you a little bit. Like I said, I had way. I mean, it's getting to the stage where it was a big, you know, decent chunk of my portfolio, by far the biggest stock. And I was sitting on a big profit, and literally that was greed and just lack of portfolio management that cost me that. I mean, I got out. It's a little profit, but no, in the end, of course, what it would have been. So it was gutting. I remember the day it happened, and it was like a punch in the stomach, and it was awful. And, oh, my word. Just seeing the portfolio value drop massively. And as I said, just overexposed, pretty much. Cool stuff.
Know the feeling. I know the feeling.
Exactly, yeah, exactly. Never again, I say that. lovely stuff, Ian. Thanks for that. Speaking next to Wiki.
Excellent. Thanks, Justin.
The Share Pickers Podcast with Justin Waite. The content of this podcast is not intended as investment advice. It is for information purposes only. People in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.